Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Monday, June 24th, 2019. Coming up this hour.
Tensions between the U.S. and Iran ramp up for a third week.
I'm not looking for war, and if there is, it'll be obliteration like you've never seen before.
Oil gains as geopolitical risks mount ahead of the high-stakes meeting between Presidents Trump and Xi in Osaka.
President Trump has delayed nationwide migrant roundup, sending an ultimatum to Congress. Plus, Secretary of State Pompeo says the U.S. and North Korea are in a better place. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. The Yankee win streak ended at 8. A lopsided home loss to Houston. The Mets blew a late lead, lost to the Cubs in Chicago.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. On Bloomberg 1130 New York. Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 1061 Boston. Bloomberg 960 San Francisco. Sirius XM 119. And around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Karen Moscow.
And I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by Harvard Business School Executive Education, helping leaders build the decision-making skills needed to thrive on change. Learn more at hbs.me/radio. That's hbs.me/radio.
And U.S. futures are higher this morning to begin a new trading week. We're at 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 7 points, Dow futures up 55, NASDAQ futures up 26. The DAX in Germany is down 0.4%, CAC in Paris down 0.1%, FTSE 100 up 0.1%. Nikkei 225 in Japan gained 0.1%, and the Hang Seng in Hong Kong was up about the same. 10-year Treasury up 4/32, yield 2.03%. Yield on the two-year 1.76%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.8% or 47 cents at $57.89 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.6% or $9 to $14.08.90 an ounce. The euro 1.1386 against the dollar. The yen 107.38. Nathan.
Karen, we begin with tensions between the U.S. and Iran ramping up for a third week.
I'm not looking for war, and if there is, it'll be obliteration like you've never seen before. But I'm not looking to do that. But you can't have a nuclear weapon.
President Trump speaking on NBC's Meet the Press, heard here on Bloomberg Radio, as additional U.S. sanctions on Iran could come as soon as today. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo.
There'll be a significant set of new sanctions, and the world should know that we will continue to make sure it's understood that this effort that we've engaged in to deny Iran the resources to foment terror, to build out their nuclear weapon system, to build out their missile program.
So far, the U.S. has already sanctioned key sectors in Iran, including oil, banks, and steel.
The White House says about 80% of Iran's economy is currently under sanctions, but new measures may not do much to end the stalemate. Bloomberg's Zainab Fatah reports from Dubai.
The Iranian position seems to be still as it was before. We won't negotiate under duress. We won't negotiate while the sanctions are on. They believe that they held on to their part of the agreement and did what they were supposed to do, and that the other party basically broke the agreement. So far, despite the calls from the U.S. president for negotiations without any conditions, we are not seeing a receptive audience in Iran.
And that is oil climbing again this morning after last week's nearly 9% gain. Checking prices now, NYMEX crude is up almost 0.8% at $57.86 a barrel. Brent is up almost 0.2% at $65.30.
Now, in Turkey, the lira is strengthening after a local election dealt a blow to President Erdogan. Turkish opposition candidate Ekrem İmamoğlu won a redo of the Istanbul mayor's race by a landslide. We get more from Bloomberg's David Finnerty.
Was basically about a third of the GDP, so it's very important. From a political viewpoint, Erdogan's going to be a bit worried about the elections in 4 years' time. If İmamoğlu really picks up his popularity and he decides to run for president, then there'd actually be a challenge there. So I think that's why Erdogan would be worried and his policy's not been that popular.
And taking the Turkish lira now, it's stronger by 1.2%, trading at 5.7477.
In Asia today, it was a mixed session for stocks after last week's 2.5% gain for the regional benchmark index. Bloomberg's Juliet Sally joins us with details from Singapore. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning, Karen. The Nikkei 225 closed modestly higher in Tokyo at 21,285 points, despite a bearish call from Jefferies on Japanese equities due to the strengthening yen. Chip stocks in the region came under some pressure as President Trump blacklisted more Chinese tech firms. The CSI 300 was slightly higher in mainland China. Credit Suisse Swiss issued a note cutting its targets for the MSCI China, CSI 300 and Shanghai Composite Indexes, saying it expects US-China talks at the G20 summit this week to end with no agreement, yet also no new tariffs. In Singapore, I'm Juliette Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Juliette, thank you. Now, investors are looking ahead to that high-stakes meeting between Presidents Trump and Xi in Osaka as trade teams from the U.S. and China lay the groundwork for discussions at the summit. We get details from Bloomberg economics and policy correspondent Michael McKee.
President Trump's threats to escalate the trade conflict with China mean the world won't be so much watching the summit itself, but instead a scheduled sideline meeting between the president and Chinese President Xi Jinping. The best case scenario, they agree to negotiate again and pause any new round of tariffs. The worst case, a new trade-based Cold War. As if those stakes weren't high enough, Trump is also threatening other G20 countries, including the European Union and Japan, with car tariffs, all of which makes the Osaka summit the most consequential since the 2008 global financial crisis. Michael McKee, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Michael, thank you. Meanwhile, tensions between the White House and the Fed show no signs of easing, with President Trump telling NBC's Chuck Todd that Jerome Powell has not done a good job. At the same time, he denies plans to remove the chairman.
I didn't ever threaten to demote him.
There's been some talk that you might demote him to the number two slot.
I'd be able to do that if I wanted, but I haven't suggested that.
Not a threat. That's just a reminder that you
can.
No,
I have the right to do that, but I haven't said that.
Last week, Chairman Powell said he intends to serve his full four-year term.
And we'll hear from several Fed officials again this week, including the chairman. Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett reports.
Powell speaks tomorrow at the Council on Foreign Relations in New York. He'll be discussing the challenges facing the American economy. Also tomorrow, New York Fed President John Williams begins the Open Finance Forum in New York. Atlanta Fed President Raphael Bostic addresses an event hosted by his bank. St. Louis Fed President Jim Bullard speaks in St. Louis. And Richmond Fed President Tom Barkin joins a discussion at the University of Ottawa. Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Charlie, thanks. And we'll be live at that event in St. Louis for a Bloomberg Radio special, including an interview with President Bullard. Tune in for that tomorrow at noon, Wall Street time. Straight ahead, the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg. It's 5:07 on Wall Street, and Michael Barr is here to let us know what's happening on this Monday morning. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. President Trump put off nationwide migrant roundups and gave Democrats 2 weeks to work on immigration reform and stem the flow of migrants at the southern border. However, the president vowed to go ahead with deportation raids if no agreement is reached. Republican Congressman Mac Thornberry of Texas was asked on ABC's This Week about the postponed mass raids.
The challenge is, if there is a lawful deportation order, that is the law of the land, and it is the job of the executive branch in our system of government to enforce the law.
ABC's This Week can be heard Sundays on Bloomberg Radio. Meanwhile, a pediatrician who was granted access to a migrant holding facility in McAllen, Texas, described the conditions there as torture. Dr. Dolly Sevier spoke to ABC News.
I believe the conditions at these facilities are placing them at increased risk for infection, disease, and death. I believe the 24-hour lights are causing permanent damage to the development of their young brains.
Customs and Border Protection officials say that they have limited resources, but that they work to provide the best possible care to everyone in their custody, especially children. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said the U.S. and North Korea are in a better place after the leaders of the two countries exchanged letters. Bloomberg's Peter Pei has more from Seoul.
Secretary of State Michael Pompeo confirmed a North Korean state media report that President Donald Trump had sent a letter to Kim Jong-un and said that the U.S. was ready to resume talks with Pyongyang. North Korea's KCNA described the letter from Trump as having excellent content and that Kim read it with satisfaction. Pompeo's remarks on Sunday came ahead of Trump's scheduled visit to Seoul this weekend for talks with South Korean President Moon Jae-in on how to resume denuclearization talks that have stalled after Trump abruptly ended a summit with Kim in Hanoi in February. In Seoul, Peter Pei, Bloomberg Daybreak.
An NTSB investigation continues into a deadly plane crash in Hawaii that killed 11 people. The skydiving plane went down just after takeoff on the island of Oahu. Democratic presidential hopeful Bernie Sanders will propose canceling the nation's outstanding $1.6 trillion of student debt and offsetting the cost with a tax on Wall Street transactions. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thank you, Michael. It's 5:09 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's John Stashower.
Nathan, after 8 wins in a row, the Yankees had to lose sometime. They did yesterday. Jose Altuve hit J-Hap's third pitch of the day out. 2 innings later, a Tyler White grand slam. The Astros led 9-0. They won 9-4. DJ LeMahieu had 3 of the Yanks' 5 hits, including a 3-run homer. He tripled and scored in the ninth. Houston ends a 7-game losing streak. There was a big crowd at the stadium. The highlight for them, Mariano Rivera's inside-the-park home run in the old-timers game. Rivera, who next month goes into the Hall of Fame unanimously, never had a hit in his 19-year Yankee career. Mets went for 3 straight wins in Chicago, led the Cubs 3-2, 1 out, 8th inning.
And Baez hits one in the air to right field and deep. Back goes Conforto. It's got a chance! Gone! 3-run homer, Javier Baez. Listen to this crowd!
Cubs radio, they won 5-3. The question to Mets manager Mickey Callaway concerned leaving Seth Lugo in for a second inning of work.
He's our best reliever. We were up one run. We know that when he has the opportunity to go the seventh and the eighth, he's going to do it. You know, he squeaked through the first one, made some big pitches, and we had confidence he was going to do it again in the next inning.
The questions persisted about not bringing in closer Edwin Diaz. The normally affable Callaway got testy with Tim Healy, a reporter from Newsday. Pitcher Jason Vargas stepped in, made physical threats. Healy said Mets owner Jeff Wilpon called him to apologize. Travelers Golf near Hartford, Ches Revy won by 4 shots, his second PGA win. The other was 11 years ago. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Nathan?
And John, the troubled racing season at Santa Anita is over after the deaths of 30 horses at the California track. Most of them happened during the winter months when Santa Anita was hit with record rainfall totaling nearly a foot. Racing at the track is set to resume September 27th. Santa Anita is scheduled to host the Breeders' Cup in early November. S&P futures 7 points higher. Dow futures ahead by 54 points and NASDAQ futures up almost 26 points. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Coming up to 5:12 on Wall Street, straight ahead, we speak with Jane Foley, head of FX at Rabobank, on the Turkish lira rally and the outlook for the dollar ahead of U.S.-China trade talks. Stay with us for that. This is Bloomberg. Good morning.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and this update's brought to you by InnovaLawn, a leading provider of cloud-based platforms empowering data-driven healthcare for insurance companies, physicians, pharmacy, and pharmaceutical companies. InnovaLawn data has a story to tell. InnovaLawn gives it a voice. U.S. futures are climbing this morning along with Asian shares, while European stocks slip as investors weigh mounting geopolitical risks and gear up for the high-stakes meeting between Presidents Trump and Xi Jinping later this week. Oil's advancing as the White House said it was planning fresh sanctions on Iran. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 7 points this morning. Dow futures up 54. NASDAQ futures up 24. The DAX in Germany's down 0.5%. 10-year Treasury up 5/32, yield 2.03%. Yield on the 2-year 1.75%. NYMEX crude oil up 1% or 56 cents at $57.99 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.6% or $8.10 at $14.08.20 an ounce. The euro 1.1389 against the dollar, the yen 107.39. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has arrived in Saudi Arabia, where he is to meet Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman amid heightened tensions with the kingdom's rival, Iran. Pompeo said he would be talking to officials in the Persian Gulf, as well as Asia and Europe, as he sets out to build an international coalition against Iran. Meanwhile, President Trump is set to impose new economic sanctions against Iran today. President Trump has pushed back nationwide migrant roundups to allow time for Democrats to work on immigration reform. The president says if an agreement is not reached in 2 weeks, big deportation begins. In baseball, the Yankees and Mets lost. The Red Sox, Orioles, Nationals, Giants, and A's also lost. In women's soccer, the U.S. plays Spain today in the knockout round of the World Cup. Global news 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thank you. It's 519 on Wall Street and live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. Our guest on this Monday morning, Jane Foley, head of FX strategy and senior analyst for currencies at Rabobank. Good time to talk with you this morning, Jane, when we're watching the Turkish lira still stronger by about 1% against the dollar following the Istanbul election redo and the landslide defeat for President Erdogan's party. Do you see the lira showing further strength in the long term?
Well, I think it's going to really depend on whether or not we do see those bold economic reforms, which the markets have been waiting for quite a while. Now, we can understand why the lira has gone up. There's, I think, a celebration, really, of democracy, a relief to many people that we've seen the democracy shine through. But there is still a needed commitment for reforms from the main government. And I think without that, I think the Turkish lira could be under pressure over the medium to longer term.
Are you seeing then that President Erdogan could be under more pressure now following this election result to put those reforms in place?
Well, quite possibly. I mean, certainly, I think most analysts have been suggesting for quite a while that that's what the economy needs to see. Certainly, that's what investors need to see. They want to see the reforms. And until they see the reforms, I don't think they're going to be coming back into the Turkish economy in great numbers. So from that point of view, for inward investment, that's what needs to be done. And certainly the pressure on the government is there, as it has been for months.
Does this have implications for other emerging market currencies in the region, in the Middle East, considering all the tensions that are happening in the Middle East right now?
Well, I think in many respects, it's quite simple. Investors will put their money where they see opportunity, and opportunity is often generated by a government that's perceived to be running that country well, and that is often associated with economic reform. So in that respect, that's a very sort of basic economic principle, and that has been a theme for a while. I mean, it's been quite interesting in recent years to see the reforms announced by Saudi, for instance. I think those have been necessary and really there to really get the confidence of investors.
I want to look ahead to the meeting between Presidents Trump and Xi at the end of the week at the G20. What's your outlook for the dollar as we head into these potential trade talks?
Well, this is really very interesting. I mean, quite clearly, the market's put in an awful lot of store on the outcome of these meetings. And we saw overnight, for instance, we saw Asian shares pushing higher as expectations that the tone could be softened between the two presidents at the weekend. The very fact that they will have a meeting is indeed creating some comfort for many investors. But I think we've got to look beyond what could be announced. And I think what's been very clear in the last few months is this idea that some degree of tensions on some level will exist for quite a long time between the US and China. So there might be something for the presidents to agree on quite soon, and that would certainly give a relief rally, I think, to some of the risky investments in the market. But I think this isn't a topic. The tensions between the US and China is not going to be something which can be easily brushed under the carpet, and it is going to be something which has the capacity, I think, to spook markets for quite a long time.
So what will you be looking for then longer term beyond these talks coming up at the end of the week?
Well, of course, you know, one of the damaging aspects of the talks has been the impact on global growth. And global growth, of course, has begun to take its toll far more broadly. I mean, we can look at export data, for instance, German export data, South Korean, Japanese export data for months now, where we can see the weakness of the Chinese economy reflected through those. And this is something which, of course, has been seen in the growth forecasts of the large forecasts, such as the IMF, the World Bank. They've been coming down during the course of the last 6 to 9 months, etc., reflecting the weaknesses. And now we get this reflected in central banks. Many of the main central banks are, of course, changing their tune. They've been easing or promising to ease policy. So this is a really big theme, which has been impacting, of course, currency markets, debt markets, and every other market. So what we do need to see is something which can reassure investors about growth or global growth over the medium term. And I think to see some sort of compromise on trade would certainly shore up confidence about global growth over the medium term.
All right, have to leave it there for now. Jane Foley, always good to talk with you. Jane Foley is head of FX strategy, senior currency analyst at Rabobank. And taking a look at the Turkish lira at the moment, it is up 1% at 5.7573. Offshore yuan down 0.2%, 6.8798. This is Bloomberg. And it's 525 on Wall Street. Straight ahead, no end to tensions between the U.S. and Iran, plus all the latest news in business, economics, and finance. Stay with us for it. I'm Nathan Hager. This is Bloomberg. Good morning.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We are just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. futures and bonds are rising ahead of this week's pivotal G20 meeting between Presidents Donald Trump and Xi Jinping.
Oil is heading higher as tensions between the U.S. and Iran ramp up for a third week.
I'm not looking for war. And if there is, it'll be obliteration like you've never seen before. But I'm not looking to do that. But you can't have a nuclear weapon.
President Trump speaking on NBC's Meet the Press, heard here on Bloomberg Radio, as additional U.S. sanctions on Iran could come as soon as today.
At the same time, the White House says it's ready to talk to Iran with no preconditions. Bloomberg's Golnar Mattavely reports from Tehran.
The sense is that this latest call for negotiations from the Trump administration is going to elicit the same response. Iran won't be interested in negotiations while its economy is under attack like this from U.S. sanctions.
In Turkey, the lira is strengthening after a local election dealt a blow to President Erdogan. Bloomberg's Simon Demirkan reports from Istanbul.
Turkey's opposition candidate Ekrem İmamoğlu won the redo of the Istanbul mayor's race by a landslide. In a stinging indictment of President Recep Tayyip Erdogan's economic policies and his refusal to accept an earlier defeat. In Istanbul, Simon Demirkan, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Hey, Simon, thanks. Checking the lira right now, it's stronger by 1% at 5.7560.
A slump in German business confidence deepened in June as trade tensions weighed on manufacturers. The drop in the IFO index took the closely watched gauge to 97.4. That's its lowest level since late 2014.
Shares of Daimler are down more than 4%. Daimler cut its profit forecast for the third time in a year, with the German automaker's new leadership blaming longstanding proceedings around allegations of emissions tampering.
And Bloomberg News has learned Eldorado Resorts has agreed to buy Caesars Entertainment for about $8.7 billion. Now let's get you up to date on how stocks are faring. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are up 6 points this morning. Dow futures up 47. NASDAQ futures up 21. The DAX in Germany is down 0.6%. CAC in Paris down 0.25%. FTSE 100 little changed. 10-year Treasury up 6/32nds. Yield 2.03%. Yield on the 2-year 1.75%. NYMEX crude oil is up 0.6% or 36 cents to $57.81 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.6% or $8.90 to $14.09 an ounce. The euro 1.1391 against the dollar. The yen 107.34. Straight ahead, the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
All right, Karen, thank you. It is 5:33 on Wall Street. Let's bring in Michael Barr to find out what's happening in the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. President Donald Trump says he will give lawmakers 2 weeks to work out solutions for the southern border before pushing for a nationwide immigration sweep. Speaking on CBS's Face the Nation, Vice President Mike Pence says immigration reform is needed because ICE agents are being swamped by the amount of people trying to get into the country.
The American people deserve to know that our dedicated Customs and Border Patrol agents are literally being overwhelmed by hundreds of thousands of people coming across our border to take advantage of loopholes in our laws.
CBS's Face the Nation can be heard Sundays on Bloomberg Radio. Meanwhile, activists held protests in Los Angeles against the president's immigration deportations. Jorge Mario Cabrera is the coalition spokesperson for Humane Immigrant Rights.
It is very unconscionable to see a president use fear to divide the community for political purposes.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said the U.S. and North Korea were in a better place after the leaders of the two countries exchanged letters suggesting President Trump will again seek to use his rapport with Kim Jong-un to revive talks for Pyongyang to denuclearize.
We're ready to go. We're literally prepared to begin at a moment's notice if the North Koreans indicate that they're prepared for those discussions.
Pompeo spoke to reporters in Washington before departing for a multi-nation trip, including the Middle East. The Supreme Court enters its final week of decisions with two politically charged issues unresolved. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter has the story.
Whether to rein in political line drawing for partisan gain, and the other, whether to allow a citizenship question on the 2020 census. Both decisions could affect the distribution of political power for the next decade. The biggest cases by far involve the citizenship question the Trump administration wants to add to the census, and the two cases in which lower courts found that Republicans in North Carolina and Democrats in Maryland went too far in drawing congressional districts to benefit their party at the expense of the other party's voters. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Two senators plan to introduce a bipartisan bill today that would require tech companies to disclose how they're monetizing the personal information that they collect from users and allow those users to have their information deleted upon request. Global News 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thanks. It's 5:35 on Wall Street now. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's John Stashower.
Nathan, the day at the stadium began with the old-timers game and an inside-the-park home run by Mariano Rivera, who never had a hit in his 19-year Yankee career. He had some help. His former bullpen mate, Jeff Nelson, was playing center field, didn't exactly hustle after the ball. As for the real game, all Astros, they avoid getting swept. A 9-4 rout. It was 9-0 at one point. In four innings, Jay Happ gave up 8 runs and 11 hits.
I'm out there trying to compete, and sometimes you're trying to do some stuff that maybe not used to doing, or maybe I tried to do some stuff to maybe pitch to a report. Again, I take full responsibility for what I did out there today, and it wasn't good.
Ends the 8-game winning streak. Yanks host Toronto tonight, first of three before they leave for London. Mets tonight in Philadelphia. The Phils have lost 7 in a row. At Wrigley, good outing from Jacob DeGrom. 27th home run for Pete Alonso in less than half a season. He's broken Daryl Strawberry's 1983 record for homers by a rookie. Mets were 5 outs from a third straight win. Javi Baez with a 3-run homer off Seth Lugo, and the Cubs won 5-3. There were persistent questions to Met manager Mickey Callaway about leaving Lugo in for a second inning of work instead of bringing in his closer, Edwin Diaz.
No, I mean, just because you think so? Absolutely not. We have a very good plan. We know what we're doing, and we're going to stick to it. So again, no, we're not going to use him for 5 outs. I know you guys keep on asking, but my answer is going to stay the same.
Pitcher Jason Vargas then made physical threats to Newsday reporter Tim Healy, who said Met owner Jeff Wilpon called to apologize. Chez Revy's second PGA win, first in 11 years, took the Travelers near Hartford by 4 shots. The Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. I'm John Stashower.
All right, John, thank you. It's 5:37 on Wall Street. The latest edition of Bloomberg Business Week is on newsstands now with the cover on Pride Month and protections for LGBTQ workers. Also in this week's issue, we'll look ahead to this week's high-stakes G20 summit. Sean Donnan wrote the story for Bloomberg Business Week.
President Trump really has managed, if nothing else, to turn these summits from these kind of very earnest negotiations where everyone's kind of biting their nails, waiting for the communique and trying to dissect all that language into a pretty spicy affair.
Read more on this and other stories in this week's edition of Bloomberg Business Week. Know what matters and why. Visit businessweek.com or pick up a copy of the magazine on newsstands now and listen to Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly weekdays at 2 p.m. Wall Street time on Bloomberg Radio. 5:38 on Wall Street time for the Tri-State Business Report with Bloomberg's Ed Corey. Good morning, Ed.
Morning, Nathan. Yale University is enlisting the help of longtime Chief Investment Officer David Swenson. The school's trying to develop the next generation of asset managers. Swenson has run Yale's $29 billion endowment since 1985. He will teach in the Ivy League school's new master's program focused on asset management. Well, retailers that sell consumable goods infused with CBD, the ingredient in marijuana that doesn't get people high but is said to relieve pain and anxiety, are poised to yank them from store shelves. A ban from the city's Department of Health and Mental Hygiene goes into effect July 1st. Major retailers have diversified their inventory for Pride Month, celebrating LGBTQ culture. In New York City, Macy's featuring rainbow-colored Pride tribute windows. Times Square's digital billboards offer pitches for Pride-linked clothing and cosmetics. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey. Nathan?
All right, Ed, thanks. It's 5:39 on Wall Street, and Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Steve Potisk, and on KYW in Philadelphia, I'm reporting on the big Caesars and Eldorado casino operators merger.
I'm Courtney Dunahoe on KRLD in Dallas. Exxon is considering selling its remaining assets in Norway.
I'm Anna Edwards. On Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London, we're reporting on Jeremy Hunt's call for Boris Johnson to join him in a TV debate as the race for prime minister heats up.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and on WBBM in Chicago, first corn prices surged. Now with more rains forecast for the Midwest, soybeans could be the next market to soar.
I'm Ed Corey on WWJ in Detroit. I'm reporting that Fiat Chrysler and Renault seem to be open to the idea that their merger talks could restart.
Those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. Toy Story 4 underwhelms the box office. The Disney film did seize the top spot over the weekend, knocked off Men in Black International. But it took in less money than analysts predicted. ComScore says the sequel brought in $118 million in U.S. and Canadian theaters. That compares with estimates of $140 to $170 million. You are listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. It's coming up to 5:41 on Wall Street. Straight ahead, we check in with Bloomberg Opinion, our global platform for fast commentary and instant analysis of some of this morning's top news. Stay with us for it. This is Bloomberg.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. U.S. futures climbing this morning along with Asian stocks while European shares slip as investors weigh mounting geopolitical risks and gear up for the high-stakes meeting between Presidents Trump and Xi Jinping later this week. Oil is advancing as the White House says it was planning fresh sanctions on Iran. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 6.5 points, Dow futures up 49, NASDAQ futures up 24, the DAX in Germany down 0.5%, 10-year Treasury up 6/32nds, yield 2.03%, yield on the 2-year 1.75%, NYMEX crude oil up 0.8% or 45 cents at $57.88 a barrel, COMEX gold up 0.6% or $8.60 to $14.0870 an ounce, the euro 1.1390 against the dollar, the yen 107.37. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, President Trump is preparing to impose new economic sanctions against Iran today. Meanwhile, the president says he would be willing to talk to Iran with no preconditions, and his top advisors say a deal can be reached. Democratic presidential candidate and South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg was off the campaign trail and back in Indiana over the weekend. Buttigieg held an emotional town hall to address the incident involving a white South Bend police officer shooting and killing a black man. Buttigieg acknowledged the police department has fallen short in recruiting minority police officers and introduced body cameras. In baseball, the Yankees and Mets lost. The Red Sox, Orioles, Nationals, Giants, and A's also lost. In women's soccer, the U.S. plays Spain today in the knockout round of the World Cup. Global news 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thank you. We are live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, where it's coming up to 5:49 on Wall Street. That's the time to check in with Bloomberg Opinion, our platform offering informed perspectives on a range of global topics and expert data-driven commentary on breaking news. Bloomberg Opinion editor Jennifer Ryan is with us from our London bureau on this Monday morning. Taking a look first, Jen, at the surge in Bitcoin we've been following for some time here. But with Facebook now unveiling its own cryptocurrency, does Lionel Laurent see correlation here?
Well, certainly, if you see Bitcoin once again surging past $10,000, you've got to sort of wonder what's going on here. And it looks like there's a link, because you've got Mark Zuckerberg unveiling Libra, the corporate version of Bitcoin, which embraces regulation and is backed by fiat money like dollars. Bitcoin doesn't and is not. But no matter the glaring differences between the two digital tokens, Leonard Laurent's point is that there's kind of a narrative now that crypto has finally made it. So if it's good enough for Mark Zuckerberg, this thing must be real.
But we've seen this movie before, haven't we? I mean, there have been times in the past where we've said it looks like crypto's made it.
Yeah, you are not wrong, because, I mean, 2017 was the first time that Bitcoin rose above $10,000. And since that time, still, there's a lot that's still the same. The market is still pretty murky. Regulators are probing potential price manipulation, concerned that a large proportion of reported trading volumes are fake or exaggerated. And then from a practical perspective, there's still a few things to complain about. I mean, it's a slow and cumbersome and costly currency to use. It processes about 5 transactions per second versus about 1,700 on the Visa network.
So, I mean, the broader question, though, is, you know, what is driving this rally in Bitcoin? I mean, it can't just be Facebook.
Well, you've got to wonder, you know, what its long-term future is. Can you use it, for example, as a store of value? That's one argument that gets bandied about. But Laurent says, if you take a look at how the price has been swinging around since its inception, this does not offer a lot of comfort if what you're trying to do is lock down some value. I mean, the potential for price swings is really just kind of unlimited. Laurent describes it as a speculator's paradise. So rather than kind of blame Zuckerberg for the cryptocurrency's problem, really what everyone starts to do is wonder about what are the real world problems that fuel people's desire for a golden ticket. You know, buy 3 bitcoins and you're set for life. The point that he makes is that for millennials, for example, saving money earns no interest. Central bank rates are stuck at record lows. Retirement looks to be a dream. Owning a house is beyond reach. And so, low, you've got some enthusiasm for Bitcoin. But instead of blaming Bitcoin or blaming cryptocurrencies for all these troubles, why don't we try to solve these real world problems?
All right, let's move on from crypto to crude now. A week from today, we get a meeting with OPEC ministers in Vienna. It appears to be a done deal. But Julian Lee this morning writes that the big question is whether Russia sticks to whatever OPEC does.
Yeah, so Russia and a few other countries have been friends, so-called friends of OPEC, since 2016. They've been all working together to enact a policy of production restraint. And so the question is, should that policy continue? Well, we've long been arguing, or Julian Lee has long been arguing, yes, that policy is still needed. And so from that perspective, the meeting next week looks like a done deal. But what will Russia do? Because Russia's actually got a lot of reason to back away from the deal. But Lee's point is that it's going to continue to pay lip service, because for Russia, the participation in the OPEC plus output restraint policy is a lot less about the needs of its own oil industry and more about President Vladimir Putin's relationship with his new ally in the region, Saudi Prince Mohammed bin Salman. Putin has a lot at stake there, because there's a lot of wider trade and investment deals still being negotiated. And so if he's being seen as continuing to support Saudi efforts to underpin oil prices, that can only help those broader discussions.
And apart from the Putin-MBS relationship, there are quite a few interests in Russia who would like to see that policy get reversed.
You're exactly right. So one of these is Rosneft, the state-controlled oil giant. So the loudest critic, the CEO has been the loudest critic of Russia's alignment with OPEC. And he warned earlier this month that extending the deal is going to cause Russia to cede global market share to the U.S. And, you know, really, he has a point, because while Saudi Arabia and Russia are both producing less oil now than they were, you know, in late 2016, U.S. output has soared. It's risen by more than a third as producers tapping the country's vast shale formations have bounced back from the price collapse of 2014 and 15.
Bloomberg opinion editor Jennifer Ryan, thank you as always. Lots to look forward to as we get ready for that meeting next week. You can read more about this and other stories from Bloomberg Opinion at Bloomberg.com/opinion or on the Bloomberg terminal. Just type OPIN. Go. Karen.
Nathan, thank you. It is 5:54 on Wall Street. It's time for the Bloomberg Law Report. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning with Steve Podisk in the Bloomberg 99.1 Washington Newsroom.
The U.S. Patent and Trademark Office has released guidelines for the cannabis industry. They provide instruction for those who want federal protection for their trademarks. Documentation, it's what you need if you want to make a successful whistleblower claim. The director of that office at the IRS says many of the 1,000 or so claims received each month are rejected because they're not specific enough. And a couple of defense suppliers will no longer be able to do business with the federal government. That's part of a settlement of a false claim suit.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need on one legal research platform. Guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
Steve, thank you. Now, another legal story we're watching, a decades-long legal saga that has no end in sight. The Supreme Court throwing out the death sentence of a Mississippi man convicted at his sixth trial for the same murders after the prosecutor repeatedly excluded African Americans from the jury. For more on the case, June Grasso speaks to Bloomberg News Supreme Court reporter Greg Storr.
This involved what's called peremptory challenges to a jury, so lawyers can strike jurors without stating a reason. Explain what happened here.
So what happened here is this man, Curtis Flowers, was tried six different times for the same crimes, the murders in 1996. And prosecutors in those six trials, actually the same prosecutor, District Attorney Doug Evans, used peremptory challenges to strike 41 out of 42 prospective black jurors from those jury panels. And the Supreme Court looked at this case and said, you know, if you look at the history of it, it's clear that he has used race intentionally, and so we're going to throw out his latest conviction.
In the dissent were Justices Clarence Thomas and Neil Gorsuch, and this was a case where Justice Thomas actually asked a question.
He did, yes. Justice Thomas almost never asked questions. In this one, at the very end of the argument, he asked Mr. Flowers' attorney whether his lawyer at trial had exercised peremptory challenges as well to strike white jurors from the panel. Now, the Supreme Court has said that the problem is not that defendants are using peremptory challenges in a discriminatory manner. The thing we're worried about here is prosecutors doing that, because that would mean a criminal defendant may not be getting a fair trial. This came up in his Justice Thomas's dissent to a small degree. It was a very strongly worded dissent, in which he ended by saying that the court's opinion might boost its self-esteem, but it needlessly prolongs the suffering of the four victims' families.
And that's Bloomberg News Supreme Court reporter Greg Storr speaking to Bloomberg's June Grasso. You can listen to more legal analysis like this on Bloomberg Politics, Policy, Power, and Law weekdays at 12 p.m. Wall Street time here on Bloomberg Radio. And find more legal news at BloombergLaw.com. Attorneys will find exceptional legal research and business development tools there as well. Visit BloombergLaw.com for more information. S&P futures are up about 7 points this morning. Dow futures up 53. NASDAQ futures up 24. 10-year Treasury up 7/32, yield 2.02%, yield on the 2-year 1.75%, and NYMEX crude oil is up 0.7% or 42 cents at $57.85 a barrel. Bloomberg Daybreak continues. This is Bloomberg.